everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. I was thinking today about the fact that it's been more than 10 years that I've been streaming. I've been a streamer for more than 10 years, more than a decade, because we're in 2024, and I started streaming maybe in 2012, 2013, and not full-time then, but I was streaming already. And I've been living mostly on the internet live for more than a decade now. Most of the time being recorded live in some form, not being pre-recorded in an uploaded video. It's quite amazing when you think about it. 2024, here we are. I've seen the internet evolve a lot. And MB14 was asking, is Bitcoins God's money? I was explaining this to my girlfriend. If there is a God, and if he would want to modify the universe to go in a certain direction, if he wanted to change the course of the universe, the Bitcoin blockchain would probably be the best way to do it. And the best way to do it in a way that no humans would ever notice. Because all you need to change is in one computer, you just change the sequence of random numbers that lead to a miner to acquire a block reward. And you just make that miner continue to shuffle in random while you favor another miner from another country. And poof, suddenly the Bitcoin is born in China instead of the US. And you could totally change history with this. Just give a little edge. Just give a little edge to one country. Just shuffle their randomness a little more advantageously, and suddenly they have more Bitcoin. Eventually, those Bitcoins are sold. They go into networks of humans. But eventually, that one Bitcoin can raise an entire army and can determine what one side of the world. That one side of the world can continue living, the other cannot. It's probably the most parsimonious way to influence human society would be to flip a random bit in a Bitcoin miner. That could have massive, the butterfly effect, as they call it in meteorological science. The Quds News Network is updating about the actions of the Palestinian resistance. Al-Qassam Brigades says that it targeted an Israeli tank and destroyed it. Then an Israeli rescue force attempted to withdraw the tank from the location. However, resistance fighters foiled the rescue mission, which pushed an Israeli aircraft to bomb the tank with several missiles, completely crushing it and killing all Israeli soldiers inside. It's dirty war, and the Gaza resistance is playing the full game of kind of resistance warfare, where they are not there to defend an official territory line. They are just there to make all advancements super painful, all maintenance of troops on position for the Israelis super costly. And so they attack tanks one at a time, and they make sure that the rescue missions are also attacked. That is true resistance warfare, not with the aim of defending a border the way Russia wants to do it against Ukraine, but just with the aim of making the occupation too costly to be maintained long term. And eventually the other side gets tired. They can't sustain the war of attrition anymore. John Drake says the U.S. not going all in on BTC will be seen as their biggest mistake. Absolutely. It would have been so easy for the U.S. to just become a monopoly for Bitcoin, and yet the elites have made the conversion toward Bitcoin so painful and so slow with the SEC and the red tape and the, oh no, we won't approve right now. While in Canada, you could have an ETF. In the Europe, you could have an ETF. So the US has barred itself from controlling the future. because of this. And it will be seen as a major civilizational mistake, let me tell you, because they're going to be able eventually to get in Bitcoin, but it will be at a massive cost. They will have, they could have bought all the supplies a long time ago and neutralized this technology in whatever way they want, or push it forward, but while they controlled it. Man, everyone would have wanted to be in the US to be a miner, because holy shit, I don't want to be stuck with Xi Jinping determining if Bitcoin is legal this year and I'm a Chinese miner, forget it. And so everyone would have been happy if the US could have sent a clear signal, hey, we are the place for mining Bitcoin. But they didn't do any of this. They went hard against crypto instead. Dino Legovich says, JF and Stat in chat, should I invest in crypto or in aircraft screws? Well, it depends. The aircraft screws is a very risky economic bet, because on the one hand, incompetence in the diverse teams of the airplane industry will certainly mean that we need more screws, because more of those screws get forgotten, they get lost, and we need to rescrew them. But on the other hand, if people start being afraid of flying because planes are becoming unsafe, then there won't be any demand for the screws. So it's really an all-in bet, the screws, whether they will be worth something in 10 years from now will be determined by the fine equilibrium of competency. Dino Rogovich says, psst, hey bud, want to buy some aircraft screws? Breaking, the Arizona Secretary of State has reported a glitch that is currently flipping Republican voter registrations to independent ahead of the Republican primary election. Once again, Arizona is a national embarrassment for having the most rigged elections in the country. Again, you know, the crisis of computer bugs that only affect the right wing, only affects Republicans. It's like they haven't found a single bug ever that targets left-wing voices in the censorship industry. They haven't found a single bug that removes votes from Biden. But it's always the other side. And here, the Republicans are being labeled as independent. We are currently investigating an issue where easy voter transactions. That's the name of your technology, easy voter. That doesn't sound super serious. Why not call it instant voter? Like, we make voters appear out of thin air instantly and then they disappear. Instant voters. The thing is called easy voter. Dinergovich says, it's easy. Can you imagine the ad for this? Easy voter, it's easy. Easy voter transactions, party preference as of January 17 are now containing the word party at the end of the party preference value. As a result, the current AVID system may set an easy voter party preference to other by default instead of one of the designated party preferences. This is currently impacting all recognized party preference values. Okay, that is phrased in a technical way. Like, when you write something like this, you write it not to be understandable. So there is, when the word party is at the end of the party affiliation, there's a bug that sends them into some other party preference. It's impossible to understand what's going on from this announcement, but something is afoot. Meanwhile, and Andrew Tarba calls it the single most subversive bait and switch ever. Everyone got played. He quotes the blog of Linda Yaccarino. I haven't read the blog because it just got published this afternoon. We're going to read it right now. I'm not feeling good about this announcement. Safeguarding information independence and combating hate speech. Linda says, our mandate at X is clear. We must protect free speech, safeguard information independence while tackling anti-Semitism and hate speech. Yeah, but Linda, what do we do when the news is that a bunch of Jews are digging tunnels under New York? Is this anti-Semitism? Is this information independence? What is it? What is it when that happens? Am I anti-Semitic because I want to cover that news? Safeguarding information independence and combating hate speech, building an indispensable global town square. Faced with the option of a future dependent on gatekeepers and moderators that restrict the free flow of information, or a world where information flows freely, I choose information independence. Here's why. As someone whose career was built around entertainment and news organizations, I know the impact information can have on communities and culture. Joining X has been liberating because it's a place for everyone to freely be themselves. That freedom and society's progress requires information independence. The free exchange of ideas, information, and knowledge through freedom of speech. Well, yeah. Giant Robot says, blah, 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 hate speech. Yeah, up to now, I agree in principle. But something tells me that when you start a text like this, it's to hide something at the bottom. You know, the small characters at the bottom of the contract. Okay, I agree. Freedom of speech, information independence, free exchange of IDs. Are these things possible in a manipulated algorithm, Linda? I don't think so. Because you can say, oh, well, everyone is free to speak. But I'm going to block who hears that speech. Well, there you go. You've just messed with the free market of IDs. You've made it more rewarding to share certain perspectives than others. You punish the person who claims that that Israel is committing a genocide in Gaza. You reward the people who are claiming that the Gazans, when they sing from one ocean from the ocean to the sea, that they are calling for a genocide. Now you get rewarded for this. That's how a double standard in the algorithm can lead literally to a genocide, which is what has happened in Israel. So that is the problem here. You are professing big ideas that we would agree on, but you're not taking the means to truly implement them. To drive humanity forward, society must empower people to express their thoughts, make up their own minds, but also draw the line at hate. Well, the problem is, as soon as you dig into what is hate, you find out that it's a manipulated concept. You find out that people aren't willing to call it hate as much when it's against white people. You find out that people are more willing to call it hate when it's about Jews and other minorities. You find out that by subscribing to the conception of hate speech, you have already inserted a double standard in your policy. She says, this is tough to do, but absolutely crucial. Some people believe they have complete information independence. They don't. Information independence is under threat. Heavy content filtering practices of some platforms and media entities have altered people's understanding of the truth, and we're seeing things we held as true being openly challenged. Control, censorship, and information centralization holds us back, while greater access to information propels us forward and fuels positive change. People want and need unfiltered, accurate information to make their own decisions. That's why everything X does is in service of our ultimate goal, the relentless pursuit of the truth. But what if the truth is anti-Semitic? What if the truth happens to be a fact that is inconvenient for one race or another? What do we do with these truths? Do we pursue them? Getting there means providing a platform for all ideas to flourish, where everyone, communities, creators, or businesses can freely express themselves without censorship. It also means granting equality of access to that information to everyone for free. Accurate and unbiased information will power a competitive economy and unlock greater innovation. Consider this. In the last year, there were more than 1 trillion impressions around conversations about the global economy, freedom of speech, immigration, education to election, and more. The benefits of these conversations are staggering. That's also why we've also committed to accuracy and have expanded our community-led approach with community notes to address misinformation. With more than 375,000 contributors across 65 countries. For all the good, there's also a point when information independence crosses a line too, and that's hate speech. We must all act now to combat hate, as Elon firmly stated during the European Jewish Association's symposium. Sadly, since the October 7th terrorist attack, anti-Semitism and hate speech have accelerated in the world. Yeah, but it is so important, Linda, that we distinguish what is this category that is hate speech and how do we make it fair for all races? Because right now, it's not fair for all races. Right now, a Canadian can say from one ocean to the other, and it's considered a slogan of Canada. Yet, it is a statement of domination of the English colonization of Canada against the Native Americans. When a white Canadian says that, from the perspective of a Native American, it is the exact same thing as when Benjamin Netanyahu says that he will not stop the war in Gaza until it is safe from the ocean to the sea. Now, they're both calling for a domination of a race over a territory, and none of them get called out for this. Neither a Canadian saying this nor Bibi Netanyahu saying this would get banned from Twitter. And yet a Palestinian saying this, a Palestinian saying, hey, the very term Israel is actually a term of conquest of a place that my ancestors used to inhabit. Now, that person who says Palestine, Gaza, free from one ocean, from the ocean to the sea, that person is committing hate speech on Twitter. How does that work? How do we get this balance in the implementation of hate speech rules? How can we make it fair? How can we design rules to be equal across races? You're not going to like this, because when you find out that when you apply rules equal across races, we know what will happen. You're going to find out that the most bigoted people are the very people who yell hate speech the most. You will find out that who you thought were the victims of the most racism were actually the victims of the least racism. When you equalize the rules and you ban these black people calling for the death of white people, or calling for the end of whiteness, when you start banning these people and you start gathering the stats, you're going to see, holy shit, there's a bunch of blacks and Jews on Twitter that are extremely hateful. But as long as you don't make the rules fair, you can't get the statistics, because at the entry of your statistic, you're already biasing who gets in. Who gets in that beautiful category of hate speech, which has been designated and designed to find white people guilty of something that others can't be found guilty of. Sadly, blah, blah, blah. It's all our duty to combat hate speech in our communities and on every platform, because freedom of speech and safety can and must coexist. And the future of democracy and the global economy depends on it. X is doing its part on all fronts as we build an indispensable global town square so everyone has the ability to connect, debate, share information, and soon transact. We're equally strengthening our efforts to combat hate and safeguard marginalized communities. Last year, we removed millions of pieces of content and suspended just as many accounts that violated our terms of service, including violent speech and hateful conduct policy. Plus, we've opened more lines of communication with groups dedicated to the safety of communities, both in physical and virtual space, and we'll keep going. This is not a check-the-box exercise for any of us. Combating hate is a lifetime dedication. Our mandate at X is clear. We must protect free speech, safeguard information independence while tackling anti-Semitism and hate speech. Through our collective technologies and human potential, we can create a safer and more inclusive environment for everyone, giving way more information independence to be a force for good. It won't happen overnight, but we must start now. Let's make up our minds. Because we can handle the truth. Let's fight hate with kindness and understanding. Well, be kind to me and explain to me, Linda, how is it that a Jordan Peterson can say, give them hell to Bibi Netanyahu days before the commission of an attack onto civilians of Gaza, where Bibi Netanyahu commits a genocide? How is it that we can get Jordan Peterson on Twitter saying, give them hell, Bibi? We have Bibi Netanyahu giving them hell. We have the commission of a genocide right now in Gaza, and none of the people involved in this whole chain of event is judged for hate speech on Twitter, and yet it all stemmed from a tweet by Jordan Peterson. Give them hell. How is that not an appeal to violence? I mean, Twitter even has a policy for dog whistles. See, you know, veiled appeals to violence. How is it that give them hell in the context where Bibi Netanyahu is about to bomb civilians in Gaza, just blow up babies' heads in Gaza? How is that not an appeal to violence? Lendald Guntram says, give them hell is just a metaphorical saying, unrelated to actual hell delivered by Mr. Netanyahu. I mean, this would be what a lawyer says in defense of Jordan Peterson. The hell that my client was talking about is totally unrelated to the hell that came to be. It's just a circumstance. It's circumstantial. It's a coincidence. You're making me laugh so much that I'm coughing. So you have to be careful, Linda, as you explore these things that everyone has tripped over before you. You're about to recommit the same mistakes. It's very simple, Linda. I'm giving you the trick. The trick where you can say we've been applying the best available rules. The best available rules must be tested for race independence. Here's how it goes. And by the way, even Even a Jewish thinker like Alan Dershowitz agrees on me, agrees with me on this. So, a race-blind hate rule. You have to ask yourself the question, what if a Chinese was saying this? What if a Canadian was saying this? What if a white man was saying this? What if a black man was saying this? And you're gonna be stunned by the findings. You're gonna be entering a world of pain. Because you're gonna find out that 99.9% of the users of the N-word in this society is made by the very people you claim to want to protect from hearing the N-word. And now you're going to have two paths ahead of you. Abandon race blindness or continue with it. So what do I do? If you continue with it, then either people can use the N-word and everyone can. That would be a race blind policy. Or no one can use the N-word. That would also be a race-blind policy. But don't take that other route of abandoning race-blindness, because now you're falling into the, oh, well, there are historical reasons why black people can use the N-word, but white people cannot. And now you're already in the hell of double standards, and you're ultimately in the genocidal ethnic cleansing project that the control of speech is. The selective control of racial speech. That is, this whole idea that there is a race out there that can use the N-word and it's not racist, and another race out there that can't use the N-word because that would be racist. This very idea is a kind of beating the dead horse and celebrating racial power over someone else. In other words, it is a racial aggression to be coming to another race and telling them you can't use this word, but my race can. Now, you're gonna have to choose between race blindness and not race blindness, and your choice will determine whether ultimately your platform remains the platform of free information that you claim to want it to be. There is no way you can integrate those leftist priors on racial control of speech without integrating what these racist priors were meant to do. They were meant to neutralize white people's perspective on the world. They were meant for certain ideas to be expressible by minorities that are judged to be taboo if the white person says it. But if you participate to any of this, then you're not a neutral platform for speech and thought. We have Dino Lugovic saying, are some hates more equal than others? Definitely in the current circumstance of X and other platforms, some hates are more hateful than others. MB says, I will annoy you now, Mr. JF. Nobody understands Bitcoin. Nobody in the 1634 tulip mania did understand the value of tulips either. The only value in this world is real physical work. Physical silver takes real physical work to get out of the ground. Bitcoin is just as fake as fiat. It is not just as fake as fiat because it has different properties. One of the properties that is definitely different between Bitcoin and fiat is the finite aspect of it. Secondly, it's not because something becomes fashionable that it's a tulip mania. Because at some point there has to be a product that will attract the attention of humanity in the same way that tulips did in that tulip mania, and yet will basically be a useful product. So it's not because something becomes popular that it's a tulip mania. for it to be a tulip mania, it needs to be the case that it's purely a fad and that it has no long-term use to humanity. Or if that long-term use exists, it's a very small one, like giving tulips to a loved one or whatever. So you haven't met the required threshold to demonstrate that Bitcoin is a tulip mania, because Bitcoin has a functionality that tulips don't have. MB says, tulips became extinct at the end. Yeah. The dinosaurs became extinct at the end. Does that mean that you'll become extinct? Does that mean that Bitcoin will become extinct? You have to show an overlap for a metaphor to be valid or a comparison to be valid. You have not shown that overlap because obviously Bitcoin has more use than tulips. Explain to me how, with only tulips, you're going to transfer $1 billion value from Western Europe to Japan within 10 minutes. Go ahead. Tick, 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 tick. You have 10 minutes to explain how you will do this in less than 10 minutes. You can't. There's no way you can do this with tulips. And your tulips, you're going to have to prepare for a whole season before you can even think about the logistics of carrying $1 million worth of tulips to Japan. And they would have to be dried, and it would have to be the bulbs, and you would have to have hired employees that make the bulbs dry slowly enough so that they remain alive. Then you would have employees carrying it to Japan. You're not done within a year, and you've only carried $1 million of tulips. You're not close to $1 billion of tulips, and you're not close to 10 minutes. And so he says, I can't. Exactly, you can't. That's why tulips disappeared and Bitcoin won't disappear. Lawrence was saying about my earlier commentary, well said, JF. Exactly, thank you. The involuntary celibate guy on Twitter is rising. He's playing the victim and he's always pathetic in his interventions. He's someone who has no girlfriend and his name is Involuntary Celibate. And he seems to be running a website or a forum of some kind at incels.is. Hello. If you're reading this and you're a woman that wants to be my girlfriend, feel free to reach out. My only requirement is that you're over the age of 18. Please help me retweet this so we can get some reach. I said, see, you're already starting with the wrong attitude. I have no requirement other than you being above 18 signals to the woman that you're a loser. Going out with you would therefore be a big L and something she won't want to do. You have to act like you're a Giga Chad catch. That is a universal rule of dating. It doesn't matter whether you are a Giga Chad catch. You need to act like one. And you're going to successfully eventually create a fictitious version of yourself that a female will fall in love with. You can't be out there and self-deprecating and saying how bad you are. That is not good. Not a good strategy to attract a female. I've learned yesterday, I didn't know. I've followed his Twitter account and it's always pathetic. Always self-deprecating. I'm not good. Why am I a celibate? Blah, blah, blah. Constant complaining. But what I learned yesterday is that this guy is black. I didn't know this. Involuntary celibate is a black incel. Very interesting. I hadn't pictured him in my mind. But since he's black, then he's in an even more undesirable category on the market. The only category that is worse than him really is Asian men. were at the absolute bottom of the selection ladder. Lendolt Guntram says BTC is very hard to confiscate if you know how to protect your holdings properly. Tulips, not so much. Yeah, exactly. Shamrock Shake says self-deprecating people can be manipulative. Yeah, it's like he's getting attention. You know, I see the more pathetic his tweet, the more he gets retweets and likes and people saying, oh, bro, don't be like this, bro. And there is a point at which it's unhealthy, which is like the point at which you are rewarded for acting. It's a little bit like Boogie, you know? Boogie was also very self-deprecating in his streams and saying, look, I'm a fat loser and everything. And he was getting attention and a little bit of super chats for this, so he was keeping it up. Fishing for sympathy, yes. Multi-Pyro Semtex. MB says, is this a good strategy? No, it is not. The public presence, the thing is, you will get a couple of retweets and likes on a pathetic tweet, but you cannot make it your public persona to be constantly pathetic. Because ultimately people want to see a winner. They want you to be a winner at something. And if your personality is to be a loser and you're ultimately a winner at being a loser, eventually you lose people's respect and they will get some emotional high in terms of empathy for just a couple of tweets, but you fundamentally have lost their respect. They will never look at you as a voice that's useful to anything. The bird flu says, yep, you will typecast yourself as a loser optically. Exactly. A journalist who attacked a top tennis player for refusing the COVID vaccine has died suddenly. Amazingly, this guy, he was one of the lead instigators of the attempt at cancellation of Novak Djokovic. So you'll remember when Novak Djokovic said, I'm not going to take the vaccine, even if that means being rejected from these tournaments, not being able to play. And you have here a journalist who ended up dying at 59, this week, Mike Dixon is reported to have collapsed and died suddenly at the age of 59 while covering the Australian Open. The cause of death has been kept confidential. It's amazing when they do this, they try to hide the details. It's like, okay, well, if he collapsed suddenly, it looks like a heart attack. It looks like the kind of thing you would cause by the vaccine. Mick Garnagal sends a super chat on entropy. He says, do you think that Bitcoin ETFs are used to print paper Bitcoin much in the same way that silver ETFs print paper silver to manipulate prices? That is a good question. I haven't gotten into the details of what will be the way to guarantee the reserves. But let me tell you, if they go the paper route, and if they go the, we have a promise of that many Bitcoin from Binance or Coinbase or this or that. If they go the route of promises and paper Bitcoin, eventually they're going to get fucked profoundly. And eventually the true Bitcoin holders will be rewarded, because imagine you have only paper Bitcoin and Bitcoin goes like 20x, boom. The thing is, that can happen. And if they don't have real Bitcoins to back up their guarantees, their customers are not going to get the gains, and they're going to have to admit, okay, well, we told you we were buying Bitcoins, but fractional reserve, blah, blah, blah. All these technical terms will come in. And in the end, we didn't have Bitcoin. So they're not going to be able to guarantee the gains of Bitcoin to their customers if they don't acquire real Bitcoin. So my suspicion would be they will have to have demonstrations of reserve. John Drake says, not spot ETFs. They have to buy and hold the BTC they sell to customers. Futures are a different story. Oh, well, here John Drake had the answer. Thank you, John Drake. So, that was my impression that they can't tell you you have bought the Bitcoin ETF, but then not buy Bitcoin with it. That would be very weird. MB says, no, it will not, JF. Silver squeeze have been tried in 2009. The paper silver is 390 times bigger than real Bitcoin. Yes, but the paper silver is not true spot silver. And the paper silver may be because people are speculating on silver, because people are in the futures of silver. But if you go to the market and say, I want real silver, you can still get real silver, spot silver. And as far as I know, the Bitcoin ETFs, that's how they will have to work. They will have to acquire and store in a cold wallet the actual Bitcoin. The Supreme Court is siding with the Biden administration against Texas by allowing the federal government to take down razor wire on the border. Texas is trying to enforce our laws and uphold our sovereignty, while the federal government is disregarding the law and ignoring its responsibility to protect our borders. What an upside-down world. Yeah, that's really too bad. The based female, what's her name? Amy something? The Supreme Court justice that was named by Trump sided with the Democrats on this. And we still don't have ideological extremists in place at the Supreme Court, despite naming three. Oh yeah, Conehead Barrett, that's her name. Amy Coney Barrett, that's her name. She sided with the leftists. And it's like, you have here a clear case where a state is trying to say, hey, we can see that there's a law that you shouldn't enter the U.S. illegally, but the federal government is making everything in its power for that law to be unenforced. So we're going to put the borders, we're going to put the razor wire. So it's basically a state saying we're going to take it on us to apply federal law. And to a certain extent, if you look at it through this lens, you might say, well, that's an overstep on a federal thing. But the reality is a state also has its right to defend itself. A state has its own army. A state has its own guard, the National Guard. So I think that under these pretexts, under the fact that Texas also has to protect itself against illegal immigrants who come and commit crimes, and it might be in the interest of a state, even if it's not in the interest of the federal government, it might be in the interest of a state to have its own security measures. So it's really too bad that we can't even get our right-wing justices to side here with Texas. Sarah says, the US and the UK are now heavily bombing one of the poorest countries in the world, Yemen, in the middle of the night again to ensure Israel's genocide in Gaza continues uninterrupted. Yes, that is very sad, but it seems that at this moment there is a continuation of the bombarding of Yemen, not surprising. I don't know what will happen with this long term. Will it grow into a war? Will they eventually invade Yemen? Or will they just try to neutralize their missile capacities at a distance? I don't know. CNN says why DeSantis' departure isn't likely to change the dynamic between Trump and Haley. Ron DeSantis' withdrawal from the GOP presidential race Sunday placed former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley in the kind of one-on-one matchup with Donald Trump that his Republican opponents have been thirsting for since the 2016 primary race, but even that looks unlikely to slow the former president's march to his third consecutive GOP nomination. Yeah, with Ron DeSantis siding with Trump, I don't see what can stop Trump right now other than some insurrection shenanigans being pulled by the Republican Party administration or something like this. Other than this, Haley with a third place did not gather enough vote to continue credibly in this race. And I don't think that she will get converts from Ron DeSantis very much. There are never Trumpers that would have voted for Ron DeSantis. They might switch to Haley. But with Ron DeSantis himself saying to his supporters, "I support Trump," I think that the majority will transfer to Trump. MB14 says Asian silver market, who is much more physical, always have higher price than the COMEX. When Russia and China calls COMEX and London out for their bullshit, the real price of silver will go 390x. Anyway, Israel must be... I enjoy your divagations around silver, but please do not state stuff like this in super chats. I had to delete your super chat. Diverse but incompetent comedian Rob Schneider pens an open letter calling out drag queen CEO of United Airlines. Oh yeah, because we have this missing screws problem with a plane. And now we have Scott Kirby, the CEO of United, has been exposed as a drag queen by libs of TikTok, who has incorporated drag into United Airlines. She says this video should tell you everything you need to know. Well, let's look at it. So this is the CEO of United Airlines. It's not even funny or interesting. It's really, you have to, how low of an IQ do you have for this to be funny, for this to create the laughter reaction of the girl behind the camera? It's female stuff, really. Seeing a male, he's imitating female features. and we have the picture here of missing screws. So basically a passenger was sitting in the plane. The plane was ready to start flying. And the passenger tells to the person sitting beside them. The passenger is 40-something years old, I think. And he says, "Hey, there's four screws missing. 1, 2, 3, 4. And then you see here, those are screws. So the screws are all there, but here, missing. screws are missing. They share this with the flight attendant. Eventually, people in the plane and the person beside the guy, was feeling super nervous, and they were like, she was a woman and she was starting to be nervous and starts alerting the flight attendant. And they provided time for precautionary additional engineering maintenance checks. Basically, they canceled the flight. They couldn't fly because these screws, it was uncertain whether the screws missing was a big problem or not. So the flying industry is having more and more trouble. And it's all combined with, like in other industries, the TikTok dance come with the trouble. You know, when the nurses started doing TikTok dances, you knew something was wrong. And that's where they started putting old people on ventilators and saying, "Die of COVID, fucker! Die of COVID, please! We're going to get $20,000 if you can die of COVID. Here, stuff it deeper." And during this time is the time we got the most TikTok nurse dances we've ever had. And now the planes are falling from the sky, missing screws everywhere, and we get this trans dance by the CEO himself. Multipiro says, "I can only imagine all the mistakes that are made in those aviation jobs. Aviation is one of the most dangerous industries to work in. A woman was sucked into an engine." Okay. I didn't know this woman being sucked into an engine. I'd have to see. I've had to look for the video. The SEC idiots, and we're still here in the competency crisis. The SEC idiots deliberately turned off multi-factor authentication ahead of most humiliating hack in agency's history. An unnamed person changed the password for the agency's account after gaining control of an agency employee's phone number via a simple SIM swap to make the false post on January 9. And more importantly, the reason why the hack was even possible in the first place is that the multi-factor authentication of its X account was disabled last July and wasn't re-enabled until after the incident. While MFA had previously been enabled on the SEC X account, it was disabled by X support at the staff's request in July 2023 due to issues accessing the account. So basically, the SEC got hacked because they had issues accessing the account. They found it annoying to have this 2FA, and therefore they got rid of a security layer that they themselves recommend to people. Silver Spider sends a super chat. He says, "Hey Jeff, I bought my son, who's 18 months old, toy versions of all my stuff he likes to play with for safety purposes. But he cries until I bring him into my workshop to allow him to turn on things like vacuum cleaners and grab real tools. I keep him away from danger, but it's tedious. Any advice about this?" Oh yeah, I mean, young boys, they are very quick to want to touch and experiment with every tool. It is absolutely wonderful. The solution is first, not necessarily to buy a toy version of everything, because the toy typically doesn't have the interesting things, the interesting features of the real tools. So typically, they will be content with a non-dangerous tool that you can share with them. And as long as they are under supervision, they can be in an environment where you give them, like looking at the wrenches, for example, I can totally imagine a big wrench that's big enough to potentially hurt or potentially be unliftable for your 18-month-old child. But there are these small wrenches where there's no potential for hurting. It's very light, and your kid will love playing with it. So hand him all of these objects that are usable and that are not dangerous. Now, I don't know what's the state of your workshop. Is it possible to have him in your workshop in a way that he doesn't have access to any dangerous tools? From what you describe, I suppose that your workshop seems relatively dangerous. But do carry a bunch of the simplest tools that are not dangerous. A mini wrench with maybe an adjustable ending, but not one that can clip or grip, but one that is soft and that can be rolled in or out. That is the kind of tool that he could totally be holding without any potential danger to him. So have versions of those tools that he can consider his, that he can consider, like, you can give him basically a mini toolbox for him, and they're all his tools, and he can place them in whatever way he wants, and he's going to be diverted enough to let you handle your bigger tools and leave you alone. Now, as far as insisting for going into the workshop, definitely that means your child loves the workshop. He loves what's in there, and you should bring him in there. But the degree to which you'll be able to release him, that is to not be holding him in your arm, will be determined by, is there space in this workshop where the dangerous tools cannot be reached by him? If not, then you're always going to have to carry him in your arm and keep him away from the danger. But still, you should bring him in and you should show him. Having children is like accepting that everything you do is going to take 5 times the time. So it's like you want to go to Walmart. Normally, you'd only jump in the car, go to Walmart, get back. Now you have to dress the children. Now they want to play with the toys. Now they want to check the toy alley. Now they want to play with the tools. Now, and it's the same thing with your workshops. It's like, oh, you would want to go work in your workshop, but the supervision of your child takes you 5 times. Something that would have taken you 10 minutes will now take you 50 minutes because you have to handle the whole attention of your child. He wants attention. He wants to give attention to the tools. You have to supervise all the dangers. If you accept that will be the cost of time, but you're going to enjoy life more, then it's not a problem. The fact that he wants to see the workshop, take him through, show him the workshop, work with him, develop a set of tools that you can use as play with him outside of the workshop so that he can get habituated to, oh yeah, I can have access to these simple tools in the kitchen, let's say. And he's going to be less intent on being brought to the workshop. But just in general, just enjoy time with your child. That is so wonderful. Yeah, pieces of wood, says Shamrock Shake. I mean, little chops of 2x4s that can be held by a child. You just supervise him so that he's not chewing on it or anything. And if he understands them as blocks that he can play with, they don't have much dangers to them if they're, unless they have, you know, spikes. But you might want to just ensure that it's properly polished and it's going to be blocks that they can stack, that they can position, place, transport, and even tap with some of their tools. Trump on why he calls Nikki Haley Nimbra. It just feels good to me. Racism just feels good. The true essence of Trumpism.
It just felt good to me. And with her, it's just something that came. It's a little bit of a takeoff on her name, you know, her name. wherever she may come from. But it's just
what do you mean by that?
What
do you mean?
It's a little bit of a takeoff. I look at her name. I look at a lot of people. You know, I do a lot of names for people, like Pocahontas. She said, my mother said I look like an Indian, so I started calling her Pocahontas. Some people say I'm very good at that, but it just felt good to me. And with her.
Trump has this boomer way of being racist, like this passive aggressive comment that he does here, wherever she comes from. It's like, it's not a fully assumed racism, but clearly it's, you are saying that given where she comes from, given that she's a descendant of Indians, you are suggesting that she is not a proper fit for an American president. And the only thing I have to criticize against this is the whole unassuming boomer attitude with it. It's like Trump wouldn't be openly racist, and just like all the boomers, he will always be like, oh no, I'm not racist. I'm not racist. I'm absolutely not. I'm the least racist person in the world. But you know where she comes from? It's so unmanly to me to be capable of having a position, a public position that is totally the reverse of what your passive aggressive little attacks are revealing. I couldn't possibly hold that much cognitive dissonance inside of me, but the boomers definitely can. And as a last news item, you will own nothing because they will steal everything. The plan is in the process of unfolding now, the Great Taking, a stunning plan to steal almost all wealth and legally not be required to pay one red cent for it. The core of what I'm showing here is about securities, stocks, and bonds. I also go into the good old-fashioned way of doing it, which is taking anything encumbered with debt. That's been done for centuries. They create a cycle where there is a fall in price, and then anyone who is in debt is in trouble, and the collateral is taken. This was the big hammer in the Great Taking 1.0, which was the Great Depression. In this go-around, the Great Taking 2.0, that is taking things that are not encumbered with debt. There is very sophisticated subterfuge that has been put into place. They have worked half a century to put this into place, so it is quite deliberate. This is not an accident. The sleight of hand in regulations that changes ownership of securities in a severe financial meltdown, which is already planned. The public had property rights to these stocks and bonds, but they turned that into a contractual claim, so they have no rights or standing in a bankruptcy. Then the collateral is transported into the central clearing parties, which are set up to fail. They are actually preparing for that. Okay, so basically, the idea that they will give a special statute, or they have already given special statute to stocks as having no meaning legally, then there would be an economic crisis. The government would take possession of all these stocks. They would suddenly define them as theirs. And then this central corporate entity that accumulates the stocks would fail, a little bit like Fannie Mae and whatever the other one was that failed in the real estate crisis in 2008. And basically that would be a conspiracy designed to take over the stocks of the world. I don't know. Is that true? Personally, I don't feel concerned because I have Bitcoin. Freddie Mac. Yeah, Freddie Mac. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. What a ridiculous pair of names. for two companies. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe there is such a plan. That would be basically a communist takeover of the means of production. In any case, I think that you can protect yourself against this by not owning Bitcoin ETFs, not owning stock market papers, not owning paper silver. I'm looking at you, MB14. If you just own Bitcoin, I think you should be protected from such a stratagem, unless somehow through this stratagem they would be acquiring so many miners that they would also take control of Bitcoin and change the rules. But yeah, interesting theory. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you for being with me, and I'll see you all tomorrow.